shit worth it? The boy said, Daddy gonna take me to task, but I'll be back by Christmas. With all the will in the world, diving for dear life, when we should be diving for pearls. Oh, hello, welcome to...
Wow, I was mesmerised.
Was it? Somebody said that someone got filled in for saying that people get killed in. The result of their shipbuilding. Podcast number 89.
Apparently Suede did a version of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because Clive Langer, who produced, along with Alan Winstanley, produced my hit record, Hello John, Got a New Motor, co-wrote that song with Elvis Costello. But I suppose it's in my mind because it has relevance, because I don't know if I've said this before, but I worked with years ago, I worked with an Israeli actor, a very decent person, who had served on the border of Gaza in, relatively quiet at times. But he said everybody in his squad was now either had problems with drink or drugs or violence.
Mm.
And that's what it did to them, imposing a jet. You don't get off. Some people did because they've got no moral heart, no compassion at all. But a lot of people pay a price if you, if you shoot a fucking child in the head, conscience will, whatever, your brain will make you pay a price for that. And so we're letting these 100 psycho murderers back into the country, and that's a danger for us. There are dangers themselves and also a danger to us. It's extraordinary. But also, the ban on Palestine action has been brought in with, in consultation, as documents have revealed, with Elbit Systems, murderer, the designers of murder equipment. And we believe in Israel, this Israeli, pro-Israel lobby group. We believe in genocide, as they could be called. We believe in the murder of babies. We believe in ethnic cleansing. Would be their subheadings.
We believe in colonial occupation.
Yes, we believe in everything bad.
And white supremacy.
Yep. But they were, they were allowed to make submissions to Yvette Cooper and, Amnesty International, people who are actually affected by this shit, they weren't allowed to. We weren't allowed to represent to them. Anyway, I think it's in the courts tomorrow, so I'm part of that. I'm part of the submission. We'll see what happens. I actually...
What's in the courts tomorrow?
I made a submission to about how the chilling effect that this will have on performers and comedians, which is part of the Kelly's solicitors. That is part of their submission to the court.
That's great.
And I think that's great. Good. I just said they got somebody got in touch with me and said, we're going to some blah, 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 Palestine. I said, I thought I was just signing another fucking letter. But in fact, I had to do some. And they said, you're after Hudo Amori. I think you're the next submission. I've got to do some work. I can't just go, whatever.
Well, that time.
Yeah, you have to. I thought I'd put some effort into it. Which was
well done, comrade. Good. That's good.
Funnily enough, I was at it's sort of a nice spot. We did think about buying a flat. There's a really nice spot just above Stoke Newington in London called Woodbury Down, which is these reservoirs which are ceased to function as reservoirs in the 80s and were allowed to become wildlife reservoirs. And there was and we thought about there's some lovely kind of flats with rooftop terraces and stuff, modern flats built around there. So we thought, maybe we'll get a flat because you get an amazing view of this lake and shit like that. But then I realized that then we started, we went to a pub and there was a little, like a thing of story of the area. And in fact, this area had been the site of a really kind of, I can't really call it, like idealistic LCC, London County Council, housing development in the built in the 50s. And built for working class people and, you know, with community centres and, you know, very, really generous space in the flats. And all those flats had been bought up and demolished to build this private development. Woodbury down. And I thought it'd be a bit like, it'd be, you know, in the Stephen King novel, be a bit like having a flat on the Indian burial ground. Really. I thought we couldn't couldn't do it because... Because this, and it was a friend of mine's in Oxford. So it's cited as one after. There's one. The other one was the Haygate, of course, behind Elephant and Castle, which was again a huge council development, which was sold off for pennies by Southwark.
Very unsurprising to hear
council,
that.
Yeah, some private developers. But after the Haygate, Woodbury Down is the example of, you know, kind of council corruption and council. You know,
gentrifying,
gentrifying, and you know, resources that we once owned being passed over for a pittance to private. So we couldn't, even though the flats were absolutely lovely, we couldn't buy one. But we were there one day. I did, for a while. There's a nice Turkish cafe up there. I used to go up there. I think the bloke thought I lived there because I used to go all the time. Anyways, miles away. But one day I was there and I saw. Hurrying, I think, to there's a kind of yacht club, as it were, at one end of the. I saw Ed Balls and Yvette Cooper, our Home Secretary, hurrying across Woodbury Down towards a. I think they must have been going to an event. And fair play to her, she didn't have any security or anything, which is kind of remarkable.
When was this?
This was last year or the year before.
Right.
I don't know if it was. I think since the genocide began, I think.
Yes.
But anyway, just airing their fucking fat faced. Twat of a husband. And I just started laughing. I mean, I don't know whether they saw, I just started the kind of absurdity of saying, I mean, now I would say to her, if you went past, I've thought about it. L'esprit, you know, there's this thing, French thing, l'esprit d'escalier, which is means literally spirit of the stairs, which is when you think of something like really witty to say, but like 5 hours after it, the thing happened, you know, and you're on the stairs and you think, oh yeah, that should have said, fuck you fucking round faced. Shit back.
That's
called l'esprit d'escalier anyway. But then I just laughed. I just laughed at the absurdity of these two creatures hurrying
past
me on a path.
And that's enough to put you off Woodbury Down.
Yeah, well, that in itself, that those two had been there.
It looks very pretty. I'm looking at
it. It is. It's also, of course, there's a huge Orthodox Jewish school there. And the Orthodox... take their kids just to constantly sort of, which is, you know, fine, but slightly weird.
I've always been against kind of schools that segregate people by
yeah,
choice.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Well, I'm sort of reluctant because a lot of those Orthodox are either anti-Zionist or are indifferent to Zionists.
Yes.
Zionism. So, you got to give them that. But I think those kind of close communities are very unhealthy, really. The other thing was my auntie Esther, my mother's sister, younger sister Esther, went off to Manchester and married one of them. So I often think when I'm in Manchester and there's these kind of weird-looking, unhealthy-looking guys in tall black hats, that one of them is my cousin Ephraim.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, my cousin.
I didn't know that about your sister.
Yeah. Hey.
I didn't know that about your auntie.
Yeah, she was kind of cruel because she got my mother's two other sisters and got them in a Jewish home somewhere, but wouldn't because my mother was considered kind of treif, you know, was considered haram by her sisters. Mm. She wouldn't tell them where they were, so my mother, you know, died without seeing her sisters for the last decade of her life or something. It was something. I think it was something that was kind of cruel. Molly reacted in a weird way, but I think it was a very mean thing to do, not to tell.
Yeah.
But anyway, so some of those Orthodox.
I guess there's nothing, you know, on paper, like there's nothing like inherently wrong with you know, wanting to live with your own people and be in a community like that. But it does cause a lot of, you judge outwardly, don't you?
And like, yeah, I think, well, any close community, really, different. I think there's problems. There's all kinds of problems, really.
My dad always said, you know, he didn't come, when we'd see other Middle Easterners who live in London as if they're still in the Gulf or in the Middle East, and they stick with their own kind and they stick to their own rules, like as if they're back home. Yeah. Yeah, my dad was always like, I didn't move to England to live like I'm still in Syria. I came here to be part of this community. Yeah.
It is. I do still admire, nevertheless. They're called frummers. A Yiddish word is frummers, which means devout. And that's the slightly, I don't know whether it's a pejorative term, but that is the term that Yiddish speakers use for
It does sound
Orthodox
like a slur, doesn't
frummers,
it?
Yeah.
You frummer, get out of here.
Well, I mean, we've got our own Orthodox that come on every demo. And of course, because it's on a Saturday, because it's on Sabbath, they have to walk from Stamford Hill.
Use a train on Sabbath.
No, they've got to walk all the way to. Then they walk on the demo, and then they walk home. They can't do it. They can't.
I thought you're not meant to work on the Sabbath.
Yeah,
you can't take public
transport. Or I think you can't profit from others' work. I mean, all those Hebraic scholars who listen to this podcast can explain
the
complexities
the
of it. But you're not allowed to profit from others' work either. So you know that they walk. They're fit fuckers. I'll give them that.
But they're profiting from whoever made their shoes, you know, clothes.
You want to get into some kind of rabbinical, Torahic exegesis about this, about...
Yeah, I'm going to use my semantics to argue with the Semitics.
Yeah. I do always admire them, and everybody's, you know, so, I mean, it does give that lie to that, you know, the Jews are afraid to be, you know, that everybody's really excited to see them.
Yeah.
Always, you know.
Oh, man. The lies.
Yes, where do you start?
It's driving us mad.
It is.
How are we going to move forward after this?
Yeah, now? I don't know.
Well, as a country.
If there is an ever and after. Well, one thing I think is we're going to have to join this. Whenever fucking Jeremy gets around to it, we're going to have to join this fucking party he starts.
He was being grilled about it on telly.
He was on Peston last night.
Peston,
apparently. I didn't
see
it.
Yeah. He was being grilled about the new party.
And what did he say?
Peston like kept interrupting and asking him follow-ups, and he was like, are you excited or something? Peston, like, he seemed pretty keen.
Yeah, good.
And
well, there are polls that show that even without it existing, it would get 10% of the
I think what you said was right, because he's talking to every socialist group in every part of the country, and I think that's what's making it take so long.
Yeah, he said, I think at some conference, you know, if this is delayed, it's my fault. You can't, Jezza, you can't talk to absolutely everybody. You have to at some point act.
Create the thing and people will flock to it and join up. Create a system where people can sign up.
Yeah.
You don't have to do all of that beforehand.
Talk to everybody. There's
but
a broken Britain's
grilling in.
We're going to form the party, and it's going to save Britain and the way. But there's a bloke in Preston we haven't talked to.
Yeah.
And it's, God, I've got to go around and talk to him and ask him what he thinks before we can found the fucking party. There's a woman in Aberdeen who hasn't given her views yet.
Yeah, there's a Woodcraft Folk District in Dundee who might be interested. We should go in there. Oh, but they only have their group nights on a Monday. Oh, shit. I don't have a free Monday for another 4 weeks.
Get
all right.
A fucking move on.
And he did grill him about whether he wants to be the leader of it. And Jeremy was like,
say?
I don't want to. He said, I'm there to work for the British people in whatever capacity I'm needed. He didn't answer. He basically dodged the question.
Oh, by the way, if anybody sees, I'm drinking Fanta, which we should be banning. It was an Amazon order, and they automatically sent it without. I'm sorry, I'd probably use an Amazon as itself.
Switch to Miranda, man. Have you had Miranda?
What's Miranda?
It's the They do like orange soda, and they have a strawberry flavor one.
Do they do zero azúcar?
Oh, do you I don't know think sugar? So. I think it's very much. Okay, you need zero sugar.
Fanta, cero azúcar, el premier, premier bebida de España.
I used to think it was an Arabic drink because in the Middle East, that's all you have is Miranda everywhere. Oh, really? Yeah.
I've never heard of it. Miranda.
Miranda.
Bebe, Miranda. Naranja, ahora.
Oh, it is Spanish.
Oh, it is Spanish.
Yeah.
But never seen it.
It got bought by PepsiCo, though.
Fuck. Fuck bastards.
Yeah, leading soft drink brand in Thailand and all around the Middle East. Oh, that's... I like Miranda. And you get it in the chicken shops, it's the soft drink they have there.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well,
zero sugar. Do they have it with no sugar?
Zero azúcar.
It's Mirinda. I keep saying Miranda. Mirinda.
Mirinda.
Yeah. They have finally, Gaza Cola.
Yeah.
The one I keep, trying to give it to my friends and say, here, try this instead of your Cokes. Then it's, and they're right. It's too sweet, too much sugar. But now there's sugar-free ones. I don't think it's the Gaza Cola, but there are other colas that are Palestine Cola.
Right.
I can't remember all the different names, but it's become its own little market now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good, we should mention it. Well, then, yeah, I'm going to get
competition.
Yeah.
In the Palestinian cola market, which is good to see, I guess. It's a thriving economy now.
Yeah.
What are you going to ask me about Glastonbury or what?
Tell her, how did Glastonbury go? I did. I asked you on the phone.
I told you, I'll tell you tomorrow.
All right.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of people in a field, isn't it? Not much. No, it was.
I said it's like the First World War because they had heavy metal then, but it was called shrapnel in those days. It's a very early routine of mine.
Well, all the heavy rock bands seem to be delegated to the smaller stages now, and they put Olivia Rodrigo and Charlie XCX on the big stages. Pop acts, which is where Glastonbury has gone. It's always been a festival for the masses, and that's the popular music. Although Charlie XCX is pretty punk in her own way. It got emotional, man. I have to say,
Because of
seeing just the amount of Palestine support. I was going into it. I'd been told to worry about like packs of Zionist disruptors who were going to go and cause mischief, but I saw none of it. None of it. It was like just a sea of pro-Palestine.
Right.
Maybe there would be pockets of like indifferent people who aren't clued into them.
Yeah. Well, I think it does. I mean, without being overly optimistic, it does reflect the British people. British people are, polls have showed that they are massively pro-Palestine, I think. And
absolutely.
And anti-Israel.
And that's why we're going mad, because we're being constantly told that we're in a minority, and we're fucking not. And we're being told that we're wrong, and we're not.
Yeah.
And we're
being
told that, Kneecap and Bob Villain are the problem.
Yeah.
And they're not. They're just punk artists fucking doing their thing, man. Like
Rabbi Ephraim Mervis.
Why are they the bloody story? Yeah. And it was every act, almost every musician at one point in their show said something about Palestine.
Right.
To varying degrees of passion, and some bands completely interrupted their show. Some bands just for a brief moment held up a Palestine flag, but that's all you need,
Right.
But it was 90% of the acts, and the whole focus has been on Bob Villain.
Yeah. I don't disagree with what he says, but I probably wouldn't have said that much.
Whatever. He could have chosen his words more carefully, but there's no argument that it's inciting violence. Well, I guess there is.
If you're in a foreign army, you just kind of signed up to have violence. inflicted on you in theory. I mean, the Israeli army, of course, does.
Yes. You but know, conflating so. IDF with the whole of Israel or IDF with all of Jews, Judaism.
Yeah.
Is ridiculous, and everyone knows it.
Yeah, they do.
But I was standing in that field at the, and we all thought kneecap was going to be the story. Bob Villain completely stole the. But I was standing in the kneecap crowd.
Yeah.
I started tearing up and crying, like, because obviously it wasn't because of seeing how many people supporting Palestine. It wasn't seeing all the flags. It was just how symbolic all of this was of the real fucking tragedy. And I couldn't help but stand there and think about all the dead children and all the dead innocents and why we're all here with our Palestine. We shouldn't have to be politicizing every little part of our fucking lives.
Yeah.
And there were many points during Glastonbury where I just would just stand there and think of the real tragedy of it all. And I'd get overwhelmed by that. But it was beautiful to see. It was like a huge 5-day protest.
Yeah. I wonder if, I don't think people are intimidated anymore, are they, by the pushback, by the, you know, the Rabbi Mervis saying it's an expression of Jew hate. And
oh, fuck off.
I don't think people, I hope people aren't intimidated by that bullshit, really.
We're being lied to so much, and I think we've gone numb to it. Yeah. And the youth, the youth are going to, are going to change this world, man, because they are so on board and they're so anti-establishment. They're not taking any fucking bullshit.
They're going to change when Jeremy fucking launches.
They almost did, didn't they, in 2017, 2019?
Yeah.
But I'm saying even the generation younger than them.
Yeah,
they're just getting angrier and angrier. So, like, watch out.
Find a way to fucking bottle that. You can't do it without taking part in the political process, unfortunately. I don't quite know how, you know. But, you know, what's the best way to achieve it? But Jeremy Corbyn, Workers' Socialist Workers' Party of Workers' Party of Britain, UK, plus is, you know, would be a start.
I met this lovely old hippie who gave me a massage on the last day. I paid for it, Matt. She was in the healing fields. But she... After the massage, we started chatting about it all. There was a place there called the Palestine Museum. And she told me that they were told they're not allowed to sell Palestine flags. And just down the road from that, there was a Ukraine tent and they were allowed to sell Ukraine flags. But the Palestine shop was told they're not allowed to sell them. So they gave them away for free. They gave them all for free instead, which means there were so many more flags given out. But she was also talking to me, she had this conspiracy that she's like, I tell everyone I see they shouldn't download the Glastonbury app. I won't be surprised if because the Glastonbury app can track where you are, which is true, has the capability of tracking you. It listens to what you're talking about. It knows exactly what bands you're going to go see. And I wouldn't be surprised if everyone who went to kneecap won't be allowed to buy a ticket next time.
Well, I'm starting to. I mean, the Zionist lobby is so deep into.
It's not that far-fetched, but.
No, it's not.
I don't think that's actually going to. but yeah, everyone who's in that field gets tagged and they'll be blocked from buying a ticket.
Hezbollah tried to go old school, didn't they, using pages, and that didn't really work out. I mean, we're going to have to use typewriters.
Yeah, and then pigeons.
They'll put bombs in our typewriters. Pigeons, yeah. Like in Game of Thrones, we have to train some ravens to deliver messages.
Oh, that would be sick.
Yeah. Men on horseback.
Last thing I say about Glasto is I'm old and fat and unfit. I need to get back into Kung Fu. It completely killed me. My girlfriend was telling me that Glastonbury is the size of Brighton. She saw a side-by-side.
Yeah, I saw that last year when I was there.
Comparison?
Yeah.
And so multiple times a day, I was walking the length of Brighton, which just fucking killed me. Today is the first time I've woken up. It's Thursday now. It's the first time I woke up and not feeling in tatters all over.
Right.
Not feeling pain. And the heat. How have you been dealing with this, with the heat? What your techniques?
Well, we were in Spain for, we were going to go back, and it was even hotter there already.
Oh my God.
Just, We went to the bank. We were going to the bank about 8:30 in the morning. The mountains were just full of amateur cyclists going up and down just before, you know, just getting their miles in before 11, really. I mean, from 11,
too hot.
From 11 until nightfall, it's too hot, really.
But they've got the whole siesta culture out there. So that's, you go indoors and have a break.
They were working on the road. What used to be, what was our house is no longer. And, yeah, they would knock off, I guess, about one or two, not come back until 6 or 7. Years ago, I remember it being 42 degrees in Granada. And I just bought this sort of really a modernist gold mirror, and I found myself carrying in 42 degree heat. I found myself carrying this gold mirror past the house of Federico Garcia Lorca, you know, who was the gay poet who was murdered by the fascists in Granada and his bodies. And so that's a kind of Lorca poem in itself, isn't it? You know, in the midday heat, I carried a gold mirror past the house of Federico Garcia Lorca. I don't know what happens after that. I don't know what happens after that, really. On the banks of the river, with the Alhambra above me, I carried a gold mirror past the house of Federico Garcia Lorca and wondered what I would have for lunch.
Then you looked at yourself in the mirror.
In the mirror.
And thought, what have we become?
What have I been, yeah.
That we allowed ourselves to do this to an artist. Am I?
It was their home, which is preserved, although it's entirely surrounded by shopping malls and stuff. But there's a place called Fuente Vaqueros, which means Fountain of the Cowboys. And I think their summer home where he was born is out towards the airport in Granada, and I've also been there.
You had a place out there.
I did.
You generously let me stay last year, and there's a little book in the kitchen, a kind of like, welcome to our house, this is where all this is the facilities, this is our nearest shop. And then it's like, now a word from Alexi on what you can do in Granada if you go and visit the city. And then there's like a chapter from one of your books or something. You've written like a day in the life of Alexi.
I think somebody else did. I think Elaine, who used to look after our house, is dead now, did that.
Yeah, but it was your writing.
We've sold it. So I think it's, I don't feel like I can own, you know, a holiday home anymore. I think we've left that book. I don't know what we've done with it, actually.
It was a really nice little story you'd written about what to do in Granada. It's like, I was expecting it just to be bullet points, you know, recommendations, things to see.
I think it's from that novel I wrote, Mr. Roberts, I'm sure.
Do you think it's an excerpt from your book?
I think it might be. I don't know. I haven't looked at it for years. Really.
And you talk about, no, it's definitely from your point of view, and you talk about going to that poet's house.
Right.
And it was so hot when we went. I haven't told this story on the podcast, but we were driving down the motorway, and in front of my car was two people on a motorbike. And the person on the back of the motorbike passed out, presuming from the heat, and fell onto the tarmac right in front of my car.
Yike.
And if I wasn't so quick to react,
I'm
such an amazing driver.
Yeah.
I would have I would have had to deal with the trauma of having killed someone because it was right in front of us.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be an elderly couple, like in their 80s, and they were having like a retirement tour of Europe. They were Belgian, and they were touring Europe on their motorbike. And this poor lady is just stuck on the back of this man's middle-aged crisis motorbike, having to tag along with her husband's dream.
Yeah.
Tour, but she'd fucking, it was horrendous.
That's scary.
And we had to stop the traffic behind us. It was a busy day. We had to stop the traffic. There were like lorries who were trying to like move, keep moving on. And we were like, fucking no, there's someone on the floor here. Stop. We finally got everyone to stop. And then we had to like shield this poor old lady from the sun. We were holding up this blanket. Right. And she had, I don't want to describe her injuries, but it was awful.
Oh, really?
The sun beating down on us.
Yeah.
And we had to wait for an ambulance. Luckily, a few cars back, there was a doctor. Right. I think she was a foot doctor or something, but she right. was at least able doctor, to do first doctor, aid.
Yeah.
And people were trying to move her to the side so that the traffic could go. And the doctor was like fighting people off saying, are you crazy? Don't move her. Oh, man. What a crazy experience.
Yeah, yeah.
32 degrees, Granada motorway.
Yeah.
Anybody, have you ever experienced something like that? A life or death situation?
Probably.
Quick reactions.
Well, as I was going to say, anybody, the Alexis Hale podcast, you have to like, you know, you have to, you know, the requirements to appear on it, you have to have lightning fast reflexes. Yeah. You have to have humanistic impulses. You have to be able to run for a quarter mile full pelt. You have to
it's
know
crazy.
The name.
A moment like that, I was very relieved with myself and pleased with myself, but like, I'm like, okay, that's how I would react in a situation like that. I can like trust myself a bit more. I went up in my own books a little bit. Yeah.
You have to know the number plate of every car in the car park. You have to know that guy at the bar weighs 250 kilos and can look after himself, and the best place to find a gun is that great truck outside.
Jason Bourne.
I'm quite
shtick.
Jason Bourne.
The Mad Damon.
Yeah.
Have you ever saved someone's life?
I don't know. I have to think about that. I feel like I have, but I can't think of it. The story, I could tell this story. All right. So, you know, I notice every car I just notice cars. And we were in a car park in Granada. And we were buying a toilet brush. And I noticed it was unusual, really, a two-door Ford Sierra, which is very unusual, two-door, just going round and round the car park and stuff. And then we bought the toilet brush and drove. We were driving up to Sierra Nevada. We were driving up into the mountains. So we drove up into the mountains. And I think I noticed this Sierra, two-door Sierra behind us. And then I realized the tire was flat. And I think what happened was it was a common tactic to puncture the tire of a car, and then when they got to a remote spot to then mug the because there's four guys in the two doors here to mug the inhabitants. So I just parked on the road.
Well, you noticed that your tire was flat.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'd punctured our tire.
Shit. Okay.
And so I just stopped the car, and then Linda also always notices where the nearest petrol station is. That's what she notices. But I just stood on the car, and then as they drove, I sort of leant on the back bumper, and as they went past, I just sort of gave them the eyeball, really. I said, you know, to say, we know what you're doing. So I think for whatever reason, they went past. And then just after that, a Nissan X-Trail full of Guardia Civil came the other way. I tried to flag them down and they ignored me. Fascists. And so then we just drove to the nearest petrol station and got the tire replaced. So that's my, and I think which is kind of stupid, but there was a big display of knives in the petrol station. That's one of the things that Spanish petrol stations sell. It's a huge selection of gigantic fucking knives. I bought a giant lock knife, which I found the other day when we were packing up the house, but it's illegal, so I haven't brought it back to the UK.
Oh, is that what you were doing out in Spain?
What? Yeah, we're packing
your last visit to the house.
Yeah, yeah. It was very emotional, actually. I was surprised.
I can imagine.
I didn't think it would be. Yeah, I was tremendously
I was shocked to learn you designed the house.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's really stunning.
Yeah,
You've done
beautiful.
A great job with that piece.
Yeah. It belongs to somebody else now. So
Well, they're going to get many years of joy.
I hope so. Yeah. Well, they, you know, it was wrong. It's wrong. It was wrong. We didn't go enough, and hopefully, we'll still go back to the valley. But you know, I mean, it's not the only reason. But I also do feel if I'm going to get more involved in politics, I can't have a second home, really. So, like, some people quite certainly land for Bobby Chariots. Welsh nationalists burnt down my holiday home. It's a bit much because it's in Spain. I'm on pills for me knees.
Good on.
Sleeping in me jagger.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Good on you. Someone actually asked a question about... I put a call out on Instagram. Any questions for Alexi? And I'm not asking that.
Yeah.
Where's the one? Oh, can you sing the Revolutionary Biscuits of Italy song, please?
Oh, God. I did. I don't know whether I made that up on. I kind of made it up on the spot. I'm not sure. I can't remember now. Revolutionary Biscuits of Italy, rise up out of your box. You have nothing to lose but your wafers. Yum, 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 yum,
yum.
Yum,
yum. Yum. Who let all these pigs in the booth? What's that from? Is that a reference to something?
Something, but I can't remember what.
When is it time to boycott the BBC? Are we there yet?
Well, not while I'm on it, I suppose. While Sandwich Bar is on, available on BBC Sounds. Don't boycott the BBC, but
yet
it is. I think it is. I think it's disappointing. You know, I mean, obviously the BBC, the behaviour of the BBC is disappointing. I've signed a letter. There's a guy called Robbie Gibb who's on the board of the BBC, who was appointed by the Tories and should have been booted off as soon as Labour government came in. Robbie Gibb was a former publicity advisor or whatever, speechwriter from Theresa May. It's extremely right. I mean, he was also supposedly sole owner of the Jewish Chronicle. Now, the Jewish Chronicle is, you know, obviously a great spreader of the anti-Semitism lie, but also over the time Robbie Gibb owned it, it was, you know how toothless our press regulator is, Ofcom. Nevertheless, they censored the Jewish Chronicle 40 times, which is unheard of, especially for a publication that only comes out once a week. It also, when you know how biased our libel laws are, yet four times the Jewish Chronicle had to pay out massive costs, massive payments to left-wingers it had defamed. That they're supposedly sole owner of that publication that was doing that, apart from all the other stuff, you know, all the pro-genocide stuff that was doing, should be on the board of the BBC, is an abomination. He should be booted off. He is extremely partial. And he is, I think he's not the only reason, but he is certainly one of the reasons why the BBC has been so cowardly over its coverage of Gaza, you know. And we just had that recording this on a Thursday last night. The Channel 4 very bravely broadcast Gaza Doctors Under Attack, a film that the BBC refused to put out because it might be seen as having the perception of partiality. Not that it would be partial, but the people might see it as being partial, which sort of gives the green light to the Israel lobby to say that if they perceive it as being partial, then you won't broadcast it, even if it is clearly evidenced reporting of the many, many, many atrocities, war crimes, brutalities, sadistic behaviours, rapes, torture, etc., that the IDF commits.
I was about to have a go at you for calling it brave for them to, but it is brave, and it's such a shame. Brave. But it has to be brave. Brave of Channel 4 to screen
that. Oh, yeah.
What a shame that has to be.
I'm sorry, you're poking that at the BBC, which I'm sure they don't mind. The BBC, obviously, you know, is the target of constant attacks by, you know, the campaign against anti-Semitism, which is not a campaign against anti-Semitism. It's a campaign for Israel. That's its sole purpose. It's a campaign to invent false accusations of anti-Semitism.
There are good people at the BBC, of course. There are. They just screened
400. Go on.
That Jeremy Bowen interview with the one of the head honchos from the IHRC, which was brutally honest about Gaza. And
there are good people there. There are good people
who work at McDonald's. There are good people who work at Coca-Cola, you know. Yeah. So,
Tim Davey, I think, I mean, Tim Davey is, well, he employs me, so. I think Tim Davey is not acting in the best interest of the BBC. He's a kind of corporate, you know, also was he an executive of Pepsi? I think it's unfair
to ask you that question, and I'm sorry.
I don't mind really. And so, and the BBC seem to, it would be interesting to see where we reach a point where they stop employing me. They seem to employ me just so that they can prove that, you know, not everything in their output is politically compromised. So it's interesting. I mean, there is a budget set aside for Series 6 of Imaginary Sandwich Bar. It'd be interesting to see whether it ever gets.
Does your budget get bigger every season? Yeah. Hmm? Does your budget get bigger every season like other TV shows?
How much budget could they throw at that? Budgets usually get smaller.
It's just you on a stage.
Yeah, I have no idea. We do a lot less recordings than we used to. So, it'd be interesting to see whether I ever get to make Series 6 or anything.
Yeah, it would be.
We'll see.
Someone asked, who is the worst person in British politics apart from Farage or Starmer? It seems like we answered that already. You seem to have a soft spot for Yvette Cooper.
I mean, where do you start, really? I mean, I was doing an interview with a journalist who's writing an article about for Al Jazeera about this benefit I'm doing with Bassem Youssef on the July the 19th.
And Jen Brister, previous guest. Jen Brister. Yeah, both previous guests of the show.
Yeah. And, I think that the way our politics is set up, it is deliberately constructed, really, to attract sneaks, liars, narcissists, psychopaths, sociopaths, psychopaths, rural paths, just terrible, terrible people, really. That's the number of decent people who actually get through are
kicked out minuscule,
and then they're kicked out. You know, it's a system which is designed to attract the worst of humanity, and it succeeds in that magnificently, really. The slime. I mean, the fact that only 26 people voted against the proscription of Palestine Action, I think, tells you a lot about those people who are MPs.
Only 26. It's absolutely wild. I thought it would be a close call.
They are the worst of humanity. I think a lot of politicians, they shouldn't. I mean, it's not, in a way, it's not their fault. They shouldn't be. You know, they shouldn't be attracted. You know, I mean, I use this analogy that Heinrich Himmler was a chicken farmer. Now, Heinrich Himmler, he's probably never going to be the kind of person that you'd want to go for a pint with, Heinrich Himmler. But when the social conditions arose in which Heinrich Himmler could go from chicken farmer to head of the SS and take part in the murder of 6 million Jews and the murder of tens of millions of other people, he took that advantage. Nazi Germany allowed the system that arose, the political system that arose in Nazi Germany, allowed Heinrich Himmler to be the worst chicken farmer that he could be. What our political system, what we're going to strive for, hopefully, with the new party, El Nuevo Partido, is that you can become the best, that the Heinrich Himmlers of this world don't do any more than run failing chicken businesses, maybe not even that, but they don't get to be They don't get to be in positions of power, and they don't get to murder millions of people. And that's what we are. That's the point, I think, of what is our offer and what we should be doing is to try and, you know, we can sometimes talk in abstractionisms of justice or equality. It's about, in the end, allowing the best people to be the best people that they can be. Mm. And the worst people to be the best people that they can be, or the least worst people that they can be. That is what we are aiming for, I think.
Yeah. I think that's very well put, yeah. Politicians are perhaps acting, they're not intentionally trying to create an environment where fascism can breed, but they're acting in their own
anyway. Yeah,
they're acting in their own self-interest, you know. Yeah, and they're just, exactly, you know, careerism. Looking at it for personal gains and careerism. But
that
is the environment you end up creating, isn't
That's what you end up doing. Yeah, that is what you. And obviously, the civil servants in Nazi Germany went along with it, and you know, you end up, you know,
and you that ignorance, enabling. That mindlessness, is a crime.
Yeah,
when you have that much power.
But that's what we need to do is, I say, not talk about in abstractions of, one of the things we need to do is not talk about abstractions of equality or justice or fairness or anti-colonialism, but to say to people, even people, I think, in a way, even the capitalists, even the people in the security apparatus, to say, even to them, maybe, I don't know, this is not just off the top of my head, but to say to them, are you happy doing this, you know? Because I don't know if we're able to, going to be able to do it without people on inside the machine, really. You know what I mean? And to say to them, to say to the odd one with a conscience, are you going to, the odd copper, the odd soldier, the odd member of the security services, are you happy with this? You could be happier. You could be a happier person. You could feel better if you follow our path rather than the path of oppression. And I think that's an important offer.
All right, on that, I think this we should start winding down there. You've given us lots to think about and chew on there, Alexei. How do we get to that point where we can pose that question to the powerful directly and don't give them a route of escape or dodging the question or anything?
I was watching, there was an interview on the Chris Hedges show, I'll talk about this a little, with this Indian woman, just some sort of counsellor in Seattle, who seems to have done, I've never heard of her before, but she's done amazing things. And yet she was criticizing Mamdani because Mamdani was saying that he was going to try and make New York better for the billionaires as well. And she should say, no, I don't represent the billionaires. They're the enemy. Mm. And I thought, but I kind of, he, I don't know, so the community can discuss this. I heave towards, I kind of like his framing of that, to say even to the billionaires that you will be happier if you're not a billionaire. To say to the supporters of genocide, you will be happier if you don't support genocide. Yeah. This is for you as much as it is for the oppressed, you know. And it turned out, actually, interestingly, towards the end of the interview, it turned out she was a Trotskyist, which is interesting in the current American politics. But I wonder if the ferocity of her beliefs was, I kind of go along with Mamdani rather than her, really, in that way, to say clearly to the billionaires that they are the enemy, the Bill Ackmans. Mm. But to say to them, we are trying to make a better world for everybody, really, even in a way the billionaires, you know. Yeah, you won't be a billionaire anymore. I mean, we're going to take a lot shitload of your money off you. But even you can be happier in this new...
You'll prefer it.
...new world that we create.
I've yet to see him fail at answering a question. And I think I was a bit harsh on Stephen Colbert last week because I've seen some theories that Mamdani actually gave him that. Because the first question Colbert asked was about anti-Semitism in Israel. But there's a theory that Mamdani wants people to ask him that. So right. he can get it out of the way, because that's what everyone's thinking. Yeah, he can address the issue, and he knows he addresses it well. And then a few days later, someone messaged me about this, but I'd already seen it, actually. Colbert interviewed CNN's Middle East correspondent, and she was in Jordan, and he was talking to her about Iran. But she steered the conversation to Gaza, because she's like, that's what people in the Middle East are actually thinking about. No one's actually that worried about Iran.
Right.
Gaza, and she just gave him a bit of a... He gave her the space to talk about Gaza in a really good way. Look, we have some, we have a couple of points of business to address.
Yes.
First off, film club. Have you thought of a film?
I did, and I've forgotten what it was.
Shall I give you homework? Shall we push? Can we keep kicking it down the road? Do you want to think about it for next week, and we'll announce the film next week?
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing next week will be a live episode.
Oh yeah, we can't.
We're at the Bloody Museum of Comedy this Sunday. If you haven't got your tickets yet, there are still tickets going.
Are they?
Go to the Museum of Comedy website, search for Alexis L, buy your tickets. And
three more as well, haven't we?
Yes, we do.
Gone off that.
And we have a discount code. You know what? I'm gonna just say it here. It's meant to be just for the patrons, but I'm just going to let you guys know. If you use the discount code COMRADE15, you get 15% off your ticket. COMRADE15. See you at the Museum of Comedy, people.
Oh, how are our TikTok videos doing, by the way?
Have you... Millions and millions. Millions. You're more famous than you've ever been, Alexi. And you're garnering new fans.
In Taiwan and Indonesia and...
It's pretty wild. And like any video we put up now gets tens of thousands of views, which I'm
really very
happy with. You deserve it. We deserve it. We've been working hard at this podcast for years now. Thanks for all the support and the new followers. And speaking of, all right, let's address this. Let's do our Patreon new follower game. Do you remember this, Alexi?
Yeah, what were we going to do if we got 500? Do it naked or something?
No, we're going to do a Strangers on a Podcast. I think I miscalculated. Right. We don't have 500 quite yet paid members, but we're getting there. So this is the portion of the show where I say names at Alexi and he'll do a small bit of improv based on that name. It most likely be shit, but there might be a gem there every now and then. Isn't that right, Alexi?
That's correct.
All right, are you ready? Are you warm? Are you limber? Okay, here we go. Our new members in the last week, paid members of the Patreon, Mike B.
Buenos dias, Mike B.
Liam M. Liam McKay, I'll tell you that much.
Liam McKay, welcome to the community of the Lexicel podcast. It's a good place to be.
Mm-hmm. Tim.
Hello, Tim.
Laura P.
Hello, Laura P.
Oliver S.
Hello, Oliver. Oliver S.
Maria
possibly
B.
Short for Stalin. Oliver Stalin.
Oh, he got it. No, we're not supposed to say their names, Alexi. Maria B.
Maria B. Also, welcome. Bienvenido.
And David J.
Looks
like a Polish name, his surname.
All right. Chech. Chich.
Welcome all. Thanks for joining the Patreon community. By joining the Patreon, you support the show financially. We don't ever do advertising. We never want to ever do advertising here. And so by joining the show, you're supporting us. You know, the price of a potted plant a month. You know, from little as £3 a month, you can support the show. You'll have access to full video episodes. You'll be able to look at me and Alexi's faces. Alexi Wiley pulls funny faces whenever I start talking because he doesn't pay attention when I talk. And there's also exclusive chat rooms, community chat rooms in the Patreon where you can ask Alexi questions that we read out on the show, or you can just chat to other patrons, like-minded people. Or you can send me direct messages. Please support the show. Patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. That's Patreon, patreon.com/AlexisHale podcast. Link in the podcast description. Thank you. Obviously, if you can't afford to, we are so happy to provide this show for free forever.
I would say so happy. We're relatively happy.
That's Alexi's words. All right. Let's. I think that's plenty, don't you? One sheet is plenty,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I'll say bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Alexis Hale podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexishalepodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.